Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Outspoken with White and Jordan. 100% engagement.
It's a total disrespect.
Download Stand Well Back. Listen.
Jim White and Simon Jordan.
I don't see that view.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
From the world's biggest sports radio station, TalkSport.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. I'm Jim White, and today myself and Simon discussed the Premier League relegation battle after Luton threw away a 3-0 lead at Bournemouth. Psychologically, was this the moment Luton inched a step closer to the championship? Elsewhere, the favourites keep winning at Cheltenham, poor fan experience and dwindling numbers. So is the festival on life support? Rupert Bell, TalkSport's horse racing commentator, will join us. Plus, we talk boxing with Spencer Oliver. And after AJ's win last weekend, is this the end of crossover fights? We hear from you, the fans. This is Outspoken with White and Jordan. Last night, I looked at it. 0-1 Luton down at Bournemouth. 0-2. What? 0-3. And I'm beginning to think, wow, the Hatters are indeed the Mad Hatters tonight, but they're going in the right direction if they want to stay up. And then what do you know? A storming second half comeback from Bournemouth. 4-3. They turned the whole thing round. I'm not surprised afterwards that Luton boss Rob Edwards didn't really know what had happened.
I can, you know, go through all four of the goals, which I've done with the lads. You know, they're sort of clear in there right now so that we know they can all be avoided. There's always three or four mistakes for each one. But yeah, we put ourselves in such a good position to win a Premier League, never mind get a point to win a Premier League game of football, which is really difficult for us to do. And to be sat here now talking about a defeat is, yeah, it's tough, angry and upset. all of that right now. A little bit numb, I suppose.
A little bit emotional as well.
Disappointed. Yeah. I mean, they gave themselves an opportunity. And they were out Lutoned in terms of, you know, Bournemouth came back and did to Luton what Luton have been doing to other sides recently, which is never give up, you know, and make a game of it and then turn it into an opportunity. Luton nearly did that against Chelsea when they were trailing 3-0 and brought it back to 3-2. Look, I mean, you can make accusations about naivety or lack of game management in the second half or perhaps changes that the manager could have made. I think there's a lot of injuries at Luton that depletes an already rather thin squad that doesn't give him the opportunity. But when you're 3-0 away from home in a Premier League game, you've got to close it out because these opportunities are few and far between. And he'll be very disappointed. It may be. I mean, they have a lot of fortitude there. I mean, the points total doesn't quite reflect that, but they have a lot of fortitude there. They've been in a lot of the games, and I know there's no nobility in coming second or putting in a good. You know, a good fight is one you win, not one you turn up to. But the point is that I think this might be the straw that breaks the camel's back.
Do you think so?
It might be.
Is this the moment Luton inched a step closer?
They need to bounce back, and they need to bounce back against Nottingham Forest. Because I think if they get done again on the weekend, and Forest have got a real needs must as well, then irrespective of whether points get taken away from Everton's and Nottingham Forest of the world, I still think that they will have the ability and the wherewithal and the strength of character and knowledge to find their way out of it.
Yes.
And the depth of squad. Because there's no doubt Forest have got a relatively decent squad.
Sure.
So I think it's a sad one. It doesn't mean they're done, but I think it's normally the other way. They come out with a valiant performance and people go, oh, well done, you guys. You really made a fist of it.
Yeah.
This time round, they've turned it from a 3-0 win. They've snatched defeat from the jaws of victory.
That's right. I mean, there are sliding door moments in every relegation battle. No doubt you had a few at Palace.
Absolutely.
This is a significant one as far as Luton are concerned. I mean, to be honest, Simon, if you're Forest or Everton, you're looking at that halftime scoreline thinking, oh my God,
What's happened to Luton tonight?
Yeah. I mean, I think that certainly Sean Dyche is wily enough not to worry about what other people are doing and only worry about what his side are doing.
Yeah.
But the point is that they had an opportunity. It's up to Rob Edwards. He can't be decimated by this, and he won't.
Yeah.
You know, they've had a bit of adversity this season. They've had their captain have the tragedy and challenges that he's had, and we saw him last night being applauded, and rightly so, for coming back and being greeted by the Bournemouth fans in Tom Lockyer. You know, we've seen them, you know, defy lots of people's thinking about they were going to be just dreadful. I never thought they were going to be dreadful. I just worried about the fact that they might be prepared to accept certain things rather than say, we're here because we deserve it. And they haven't accepted anything. I wouldn't put it past them to bounce back. I saw the interview afterwards with Carlton Morris where he seems a little bit too accepting of it and a little bit too sanguine and circumspect about it, or whereas there should be a level of disappointment. And perhaps it was just for the cameras. But Rob Edwards has done very well there, and now he's got to galvanise them again.
Yeah.
They've got 10 games to go.
Yeah.
They need a point a game, maybe a point and a quarter a game, and they can do it.
And the points deduction caveat is always there in the background.
Yes, I think it, you know, it may play a part,
but
I don't know. I think if both of those sides get another couple of points taken off...
Well, it will, Simon, won't it?
Well, if both of those sides get another couple of points... If they both get a couple of points taken off, which I think is the broad brush perspective, then they're still going to be clear of Luton.
Yeah.
So it's still their gift to determine their outcomes rather than Luton to determine it for them.
Is it make or... I mean, Forest and Saturday, is it make or break for Luton?
Well, it's... I mean, it's one of those third versus fourth, isn't it? From bottom.
Mm-hmm.
So you're in that space. If Nottingham Forest... win that game, they put in a, you know, it becomes a 6 point, one of those ultimate 6 point games.
Yeah,
the psychological benefits of it, the damage that it does to the team that are immediately beneath you.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't think the other two teams are in the conversation. I don't think Sheffield United and Burnley are in the conversation. I think they're done. But it's really about Luton, and if Luton can lay a glove on Nottingham Forest, if Luton can turn the narrative round and change the direction of travel, because you see these things written, bang, they lose, they 3-0 up, lose 4-3, and then they go and get a result at Forest. If they go and get a result in Forest, then it changes the dimension. They had to get something out of these two games.
Sure.
And if it happens to be a win at Forest, then it happens to be a win at Forest.
Yeah. Luton fans, and specifically Luton fans who were there last night, I mean, I'm very keen to hear from you this morning. I mean, God knows what your mood was like when you trudged back up to wherever you came from. But what did you honestly think of last night? Could you believe what you witnessed in the second half? 03717 223344. You must have thought 3-0 up, we're home and dry. This is more like it. But then you saw what happened in the second half. Could you honestly take in what you were watching? 03717 223344 810 89. And Forest and Everton fans, obviously, there's always this caveat of the points deduction hanging over you. But do you think last night, that was the kind of answer that you hope for, that Luton didn't have a response when the other side came back at them? Do you think you're as good as safe now, and that Luton will head southwards with Burnley and, of course, with Sheffield United? Was that the sliding doors moment that you dreaded? Simon, this is what we want. Luton fans in numbers calling us up this morning, and Raj is one of them. Raj, big Luton Town fan. Were you there last night, Raj?
Hi guys, yeah, morning. Yes, I was. I'm driving back from Bournemouth now, back to London. Yeah, what an incredible evening, really. Really incredible evening. I couldn't believe it. I mean, before kickoff, I would have taken a point, right? We're looking right. We've got an extensive list of injuries. Took a point from this game, beat Forest at home. Off we go, 4 points. 3-0 up at half-time. I mean, you've always got to worry a little bit, right? I was thinking to myself at half-time, if we can keep them out for the first 10, 15 minutes, we'll be in a good place. But then the onslaught just started, and we just caved in. And yeah, it's not great, but you know, talking to a few of the other Luton fans staying in the hotel bar last night, you know, talking it through, you know, we're pretty philosophical. I think we've given it a really good go, and we'll keep giving it a go. We've got to all be pumped up for Saturday now, like the players as well, and Robbie, we've all got to be, and that is a definite six pointer. If we lose that game on Saturday, I think it's probably the end. But I think we can get the win. You know, Chong went off last night with a pretty bad injury. Hopefully he's all right, so our injury list doesn't get any worse.
I like it, Raj. But I mean, Simon's with me. Raj, are you where you thought you might be at the start of the season? Is it developing in a fashion that you thought it would?
If
somebody had told me at the beginning of the season, with 10 games to go, you're still in this and it's in your hands, we would have taken it. I would take that any time of day, right? I mean, look at the way everyone was writing us off.
Rash is just going into a tunnel, but we might get him back, we might not, but we get the drift of what he's saying. I like that caller, Simon. Here's Paul, a big Luton fan. Paul, good morning. What's your take on that? 3-0 up and you lose it.
Yeah, good morning. This morning when I woke up, I was upset. And then I sort of sat down and I thought about it. And you know what? In the goal difference table, we kind of lost 1-0. And I think that's the way we've got to kind of spin this.
Yeah.
You just asked Rod if he'd taken that position at the beginning of the season. 100%. Most people had us dead and buried by Christmas. We won't mention names, but people had us down by Christmas. We're not. We're still in there. We've still got a chance and we're still fighting. We've spent 10 years facing adversity.
Well, Paul, that's such a good way to look at it. Paul, stay in the line. I mean, Simon, you've got to admire that.
Yeah, I mean, Luton have got Forest, Bournemouth, Brentford, Everton and Fulham at home. All of these games, they can win those games. Because if they play Fulham the last game of the season and Fulham have got nothing to play for, they're on the beach. Everton is going to be a game that is going to have a lot of blood and thunder in it and they can win that game. They've already proved they can take Bournemouth to the sword when they play the second game because they've got this fixture congestion.
Yes.
So all of those games, and Forest will take care of itself on the weekend. So all of the games that they've got at home, the fact that now away from home, they're in trouble. Because they've got Spurs, Arsenal and Man City coming up. So you'd expect the next three away games for them to come away with nothing.
Having said that, and I don't like mentioning it, Simon, you said the three that came up would go down ultimately.
And I think they will.
You think they ultimately will. The thing of it is, though, Paul, you've turned this thing into a right adventure, haven't you?
I honestly think we've enjoyed every minute of it. I know last night stings, but 3-0 up at half-time, you've almost got the crown jewels, you've stolen them, and all you've got to do is get away, and we didn't. I think that's the best way to look at it. We just got caught, but hopefully Saturday we don't get caught. Hopefully Saturday we can put in a performance and keep ourselves in it, because all we really need to do is retain the hope that we can stay part of this elite club.
But these guys will be philosophical because of the journey that they've been on. You don't want to look back to the past and say, oh, we should be grateful for where we are in the present because of the past. But even if the worst case scenario happens, Luton haven't thrown the kitchen sink economically at going up, at staying up.
Yeah.
So they go back down to the Championship, if that's what happened, which I think will. They go back down with a bunch of money and Premier League experience and a decent manager, and they will keep most of their squad. And they'll probably come back up again. So really and truly, I don't think it's a disaster. But once you've been in the Premier League, I can assure you, as Paul will attest to, you don't really want to be anywhere else. All this, oh, it was lovely in the Football League because we're all together. Sod that. It's much better in the Premier League. But I think even if Luton were to go down, that I think they're probably one of the favourites to go back up again. They've now catapulted themselves as a result of good management, good supporters and good players into a position now where they're a Premier League football club that gets relegated at the end of the season and probably goes down to the Championship as one of the favourites to go back up again.
True.
It ain't that bad.
Yeah. Paul, I've been to Kenilworth Road a few times. I have to say, you've got Forest coming to your place at the weekend. I mean, it will be jumping. You create quite an atmosphere there, don't you?
You'd like to think so. You'd like to think. There's a lot of despair this morning amongst the social media stuff. People are a little bit upset and this and that. But they just got to give their heads a wobble. You know, at the end of the day, we're still in it. We're still in with a shout, and we can still surprise a few people. I mean, we surprised Arsenal at our place. We won't talk about the ref finding it for 2 minutes at the end of the game. But
you surprised Liverpool too.
We surprised Liverpool. We surprised a few teams. I think we surprised a few people this year.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Done. Let's keep on surprising a few people.
What a good way to look at it, Paul. Thanks for joining us on the show this morning. Paul, the Luton fan, still upbeat, which is great.
It's a great club. I remember watching them, you know, when Ricky Hill was playing there, David Moss was playing there, you had the Futures playing there. Obviously, you had the horrible whiff of Dowie's there, but that's a different discussion.
That's enough.
But the point is it's a football club that I always liked.
Yeah.
You know, and the players that came out of there in the past, and it's nice to see them back in and amongst it. And if the worst case scenario happens, like I just said, they'll be fine because they've got sensible ownership structures in there. They've used the money of the Premier League to enhance their opportunity for themselves, both in terms of the structuring of the football operation and some of the stuff in the stadium.
Yeah.
Luton are in a good place. They're not in a bad place. They're in a good place.
And I'm seeing it, Terry. Don't worry. One of many saying, what about Bournemouth? What about us? Yeah, It's a point. 13th, as a result of those 3 points last night, you move up to 13th and you're going, well, I mean, yeah, not bad though. Not bad, Simon. Come on.
Absolutely.
Turning around from 3-0
absolutely, but it doesn't have to be about whataboutery, does it? We're talking about Luton right now. Yeah. We've spoken about Bournemouth before. We've covered Bournemouth and the progression of the new manager and the wonderful performances that Solanke's putting in and the new boy they've got down there in Semenyo and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. We're talking about Luton now.
Okay, we're talking about Luton now. Bournemouth, you've been told. It's all about Luton.
Download, stand well back, listen.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
We're talking about Cheltenham. It's getting through the week, though, of what has been a very damp, wet Cheltenham Festival. The race scores have gone, but not in the same kind of numbers. It would seem dominance on the ground, but poor fan experience, dwindling numbers. Is the Cheltenham Festival on life support? A very good article in the Telegraph this morning, sorry, in the Times this morning and in the Telegraph this morning. Samantha Martin writes, problems on and off the track are adding to the feeling that the sparkle of National Hunt's showpiece is fading. It got worse after the final race yesterday, apparently, with cars getting stuck in the mud as they tried to leave, many stranded in the car park for more than 2 hours. To top it all off, they charged £30 per car. £30 per car to push your own car out the car park. People who are travelling by car, who pay good money to park, need to be looked after. We can't all come by coach, bus, train, or even helicopter. I'll get to the dwindling attendances in a moment. But TalkSport's horse racing commentator Rupert Bell is with us live. Rupert, is Cheltenham not what it once was?
It's not on life support that you were saying, but it's basically, it's a bit of been a bit of a sick beast this week for various reasons. The car park problem, yesterday there was no problem because the attendance was down significantly and it was much easier. It was Tuesday night that was the real horrendous experience for so many. And Cheltenham just... It didn't work out for them. We had a lot of rain. I'm not going to make excuses for it, but the weather has been horrendous throughout the winter, so it wasn't as if it was a total surprise. Even a small amount of rain, it may have been more than anticipated, even on Tuesday, was going to cause havoc, and they clearly have got that wrong. And whatever they say, it is a difficult place to suddenly shoehorn a lot of cars in, but this is an experience that is £100 often to get into certain enclosures. It's then you have to buy a race card, you buy a drink, which is about £7.50. I don't think that's excessive. £6.50 for a bacon roll. And then you couple that with the hotel prices in Cheltenham and the experience if you want to stay. The whole Cheltenham experience is taking a pounding. And remember, we're cost of living crisis. And then it's added with the total dominance, and we're not saying it's bad, of Willie Mullins. Suddenly the competitive edge of what's been seen on the track lessens the experience because there's a degree of predictability. So that basically everything seems to be aligning in a negative fashion at the moment.
Yeah, I'm looking at attendances, Simon. On a Wednesday in 2022, so we're only talking a couple of years ago, Rupert, the attendance 64,431. Yesterday, 46,771. It's down significantly, Rupert.
Yeah, well, the 2022, got to give it some, was a two-year gap because people weren't here in 2021. So that, I think, is a much higher elevated attendance than was probably expected because it was the people getting their fix having not been there for 2 years. I think we have to realise we are in a cost of living crisis, and sports events, the length and breadth of the land, have got to realise that you have to win the loyalty of your fan base. But if there's a sense that you are having to pay far too much and you're not getting value for money, they will vote for their feet. And there's nothing worse than you've spent a day at the race course and then you've spent 2 hours trying to get out. It makes you angry and takes the edge off what might have been a fantastic day's racing. But then you're just harumphing in a car park. You think, well, I won't bother again because they don't look after us properly at the start and end of the day.
Aren't we creating a bit of a storm in a teacup here, Rupert? I mean, we're talking about a 2.5. You've explained the 2022 figures because of the bump that comes with no event for 2 years during COVID. Then we look at the first 2 days of this year, and we're talking about a 2.5% difference in attendances between 2023 and 2024. And then you price in the inclemency of the weather, and aren't we looking at it going, well, you've had 2% over the 2 days, or 2.5% drop in attendance, and you've had torrential rain. So if you didn't have torrential rain, you might have found yourself in exactly the same place as we were last year.
Would you? Why is it losing now? Glastonbury doesn't.
Because it's pouring rain.
When it buckets down there.
But that's priced into Glastonbury. People go in there and sit in tents and they all go...
But it's priced into Cheltenham as well.
A 2.5% drop in attendances is deemed as a death knell.
Oh, I think the other problem is the whole... It's not just going to Cheltenham. People now can't really afford to say... We used to probably go for maybe 3 days, but the whole experience now is in Cheltenham. The hotel prices are sometimes... You think even a hotel where you think next week was probably a third of the price, maybe.
And these, these are not factors that racing can control.
No,
that's
it can't.
People profiteering off the back of the racing events.
Yeah, but Rupert, as you speak, I'm looking at messages coming in. Rich from Chelmsford. We gave up going to Cheltenham 2 years ago, full of young men who have no interest in racing. They've got interest in other activities, for sure. Queues for toilets longer than the bar. It tells you enough. Rupert, stay with us. Here's Rich, another Rich, who wants to come on and join us. I think you're an Arsenal fan. Let's hope you'll be happy at the end of the season, Rich. But on the Cheltenham Festival, and you've been there, what's your take on it?
Listen, I've been going to Cheltenham for 35 years. I was there when Best Mate, and 3 years ago I was part of a syndicate that had a winner there. I've got tickets. I'm in a private box. I've got tickets to go today and tomorrow, and I've left. I'm on my way home. The whole experience, like of what Simon's just said, it's not... If you want to watch Manchester United play Southport every day instead of watching the quality of the races now are so thinned out in order to accommodate a fourth day. You're not getting the best horses running against the other best horses. You've got novice hurdles. They've got three of the same. You've got the quality of the racing. You're seeing high horses, but they're not racing against each other.
Right, Rich, stay in the line, mate. Rupert, what would you say to Rich? Has he got a point?
He does have a point. The case I think we could allude to is Lossiemouth winning the Mayor's Hurdle should have probably gone into the Champion Hurdle, for which he probably could have won it. But this is the problem. They went after the fourth day. That I think that horse has now bolted in terms of it being reduced back down to 3 days. There was talk a few years ago, well, not even a few years ago, a couple of years ago, going up to five. But the problem is this Cheltenham meeting bankrolls a lot of racing throughout the year on behalf of Jockey Club Races and does an entry Grand National meeting. So the fact is, racing is dependent on the attendance coming. So they've been chasing the money. And Simon is saying it's not Cheltenham's fault, but actually the whole area has to come together because the hoteliers have been making money of it. But if the people don't come, they won't be making money. So they've got to stop chasing, so the fan feels at every stage they are being bled dry.
Rich, did you say to us, mate, that you've been there for the last couple of days, but you've turned around, you're coming back?
I'm on my way home. I've been there Tuesday, I've been down there since Monday. And the point about what Simon's made, listen, it costs £110, I think, to get in there today. It is the worst value for money. You get in, you can't get to the bar. You're standing out in the rain. You can't get to the toilet. You can't get anywhere. It's a numbers game, and you're treated like cattle. And it's no good. It's an unpleasant experience. If I won't go in there a day for nothing, why would someone want to pay £100 for it?
Rich, listen, thanks for your call. Rich, a regular race goer and a regular Cheltenham Festival attender, is not happy. I mean, it's obviously got problems that it needs to look at and in some fashion or other overcome, Rupert. There's Mark. Great day at Cheltenham, but trains to get home ruined it for me. Travelling back to Colchester afterwards, I got home after midnight. The station out at Cheltenham just cannot cope. I mean, the list is endless.
Build a new station then.
The list is endless, Rupert.
Well, that's not Cheltenham's fault to build a new station, but the problem is it's expensive to get on a train. I'm going to give you a... Today, the trains are a nightmare. My son was trying, and I'm going off-piste here, suddenly finds he's going to the Villa game tonight, coming up from London, suddenly finds that his train has been cancelled in the morning and he's got to pay £90 for a single. I don't know but I'm sure it's pretty expensive to take a train to Cheltenham. So then that adds to your cost as well.
Rupert,
here's
Steve, a Manchester United fan, but he actually lives in Cheltenham. Steve, good morning. What do you want to say?
Hi, guys. Absolute pleasure to speak to you all.
Thank you, mate. And you.
Yeah, the thing, as I say, I live in Cheltenham. I was a taxi driver in Cheltenham the last 20 years. I just do chauffeur now, airport chauffeuring. It's a greed issue, unfortunately, at Cheltenham. As I say, with the hotels, taxis, the catering, it's gone tenfold, really. And it's not fair on the punters. It's not fair on the punters.
Steve, listen, thanks for that. It's a tale of war, Simon, whatever way we look at it. I'm trying to see some positive text, and I don't see any coming in.
Some of it are circumstances is beyond the control. If the facilities and the environment needs to be refocused on, then it'll have to do that. If the pricing policy is the pricing policy, then it'll have to give people bang for their bucks. What trains cost and how many people can stand on a train platform has got nothing to do with Cheltenham Festival. And what individual hoteliers seek to profit out of, I mean, I know Cheltenham very well. Mm. You know, I had a business down in Cheltenham, so I know that area very well. It's a beautiful part of the country, and it's a beautiful festival. And people are necessarily capitalist in their mindset. They'll take opportunities. None of that's got to do anything to do with a festival. If the quality of performance of horses is based upon different circumstances of extrapolating a longer period of time, they need to review it.
Yeah.
But when we're talking about a 2.5% decrease in attendances, I don't think we should be ringing the death knell of this.
No, but the fan experience is lousy,
and that's fine. And that needs to be addressed.
Through all the time. There's one. I'm a regular race goer. I've been punting there for 40 years. I watched it all from home yesterday. Believe you me, it's been on the slide, Cheltenham, for years. Nothing like it used to be. Rupert, finish this off for us.
Well, I think they've got to, after this festival, the bigwigs in the Jockey Club have got to do some serious thinking about how they want this festival to proceed. And the most important thing, what Cheltenham has thrived on, is the passion of the fan. And if the fan loses that passion, then the festival does have a problem. They've got to re-engage and make it feel like it's something really special rather than just a way that they can get money out of you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The world's most dangerous download.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Our own little national treasure, Spencer Oliver, has just crept under the door and has joined us for the final hour today because we are about to embark on another hour of boxing chat, of course, before we go at 1 o'clock. Spence, how are you, mate?
Jim, very well. Rewind, that crept under the door, did you
yes.
say?
Yes. Well, you're one of the few people.
I thought I walked straight through it, no?
Oh, yes. Yes,
crept
indeed.
Under the door in Cuban heels and a top hat.
And then the cat crept in and crept out again. I think that was mud several years ago. Spencer, good to have you on board, mate. Mm. Mr. Jordan, not for the first time in his journalistic career, has done
award-winning, best-selling author.
Has done a U-turn and is now referring to your friend and mine, AJ, Anthony Joshua, after seeing off MMA fighter Francis Ngannou, is calling AJ a national treasure. He's back to national treasure status. He said that in his hugely watched column in the Mail.
Yeah, I heard this, and I sort of wanted to elaborate a little bit more on this, Simon, because, this massive U-turn, this massive turnaround from
not
you.
Not a U-turn.
And a guy that I've been backing the whole time, by the way. And a guy that I've been backing the whole time, when the chips were down with AJ, the ups and the lows, I said, this kid will come back, and he's done it. And I'm so glad that you've actually waved the white flag and done a massive U-turn.
Oh, this is going to be a difficult fight. He's got a granite chin. Ultimately, he's never been knocked down. All that rubbish, right? And all of you sat there with your thumbs up the backside on the weekend going, oh, look at that. The reality has dawned upon us.
Come on, let's be honest.
What I did was come on now, Anthony Joshua. Anthony Joshua should be celebrated for doing a job to reignite the heavyweight division, get rid of this ridiculous argument about MMA crossovers, and he did it.
Yeah,
so
but
I'm
for
applauding
the sake
him.
Of boxing,
yes,
he had to win it.
That's my point.
So to a large extent, he saved your sport, Spence.
Again, he saved our sport. Not for the first time. And I mean, look, Simon, I've always said Anthony Joshua will go down in the history books. He will become a three-time world heavyweight champion. That looks very likely now.
You make me die.
In the landscape of heavyweight boxing, that looks very likely now.
You've always said that,
have you? I have always said that, stood by that.
All right.
And you look at where Anthony Joshua is placed in the heavyweights right now.
He has a massive opportunity.
But also, you would put him in against any of them right now on that performance with that newfound confidence.
Shut up, Spencer. Come
on,
Simon. He fought
an
MMA fighter.
Come on, Simon, be honest.
He did to an MMA fighter what someone else should have done to
that
them.
That MMA fighter done to Tyson Fury. What about that? Tyson Fury?
Because I think it was a ridiculous performance from Tyson Fury.
Oh, you can't just say that.
And you have accepted the principle that Tyson Fury will bear no resemblance, you've said this, to the fighter that fought Ngannou against Usyk.
Absolutely.
Now, Anthony Joshua will likely win a third world title because he's likely to fight Filip Hrgović, who I pick him to beat. So he will get the ultimate outcomes as a result of it. And he did his job that others should have done, which is regain the credibility and composure of the conversation by winning against Ngannou and doing it in a convincing fashion. That's it.
Regain the credibility of the sport of boxing and of himself.
I think
that
you're
is
right,
important.
Spencer. I think boxing's reputation was firmly on the line.
Absolutely.
He absolutely had to win it. And win it in a devastatingly impressive fashion, which he did.
He went out there and that was an unbelievable performance. You can't say that. That wasn't an unbelievable performance.
I'm the one that wrote the bloody thing, so why should I be denying it? The point is...
We're not referring to that. Spencer knows what he's talking about. He used to fight in the ring.
Right, so let's stop the rubbish. You're an Anthony Joshua fan.
You had a fight once in the playground.
I'm an admirer of people that do things well. I'm neither a fan, an acolyte like yourself. I am just an honest, impartial observer.
You cannot say you're not an Anthony Joshua fan. You're a boxing fan. You have to be,
I think he should be praised for his achievements
this guy's
on the weekend.
Inspiration in and outside of the ring.
I think he should be praised, but what happens with you guys is you run with the hare and you hunt with the hounds. Last week it was how good Ngannou was going to be and how robust
he
is. And now
Joshua.
All of a sudden we're back to where we should have been in the first place.
Yeah, having said that.
Come on, Jim. Weigh in.
What I would ask you is this, Spencer, in all honesty, how much realistically has his stock risen as a result of getting the win, but it was against Ngannou?
Massively. Because
massively
risen, because it's all about Anthony Joshua and having that confidence in his own ability and delivering what he does. Because if you look at Anthony Joshua's always had the technical ability, the physicalities, he's always had that, but he's not had the confidence in his own belief to deliver that and to execute that. And I think what we found now is that he now believes in himself. The team up with Ben Davison has been a great one, and he showed that. He went out there and he done to an MMA fighter what a boxer should do.
Correct.
He went out there and he systematically destroyed him, iced him.
So let's characterise it that way. And if his stock has increased, because he certainly has in terms of regaining the credibility, then the feeble-minded are the ones that his stock has risen in, because he should beat Ngannou. He's had four fights over the last year. We still have the question to be answered. When he gets one on the whiskers, will we see Anthony dig deep? The argument is that he will. And the argument was over the last 12 months, which lots of people said, lots of fighting people said, Carl Froch, Barry McGuigan, a variety of people that have no skin in the game besides people's belief that Carl gets irritated about the Rob McCracken situation, that Anthony Joshua's light had gone out. Now, the four fights that he has fought in, none of them stuck it on him. We'll see. I think he'll win a world title.
Largely to do with him and how he goes about the job in hand, more than anything else.
To some extent, but Hellenius didn't come to fight. Neither did Jermaine Franklin.
But Simon...
Wallin was negated, and Ngannou was an MMA fighter. Yeah, but let's characterise it properly.
AJ never allowed them to do that. That was the point.
And that's the other side of the argument.
That's the point.
And that's a fair observation,
too. You know, he basically took their attributes away, and that's what a great fighter does. So that's what he done. So when you're saying, yeah, but Wallin's
fighter,
not...
A great fighter does
Otto
that to Wallin, other great fighters.
Look what Otto Wallin done with Tyson Fury.
2 years ago. And everyone, that's and,
ma- 2 years?
Everyone makes the argument.
Joking?
Everyone makes the argument. That's his bones, right? He made his bones on the fact of a loss against Fury. I want to see
Anthony
Joshua... Yeah,
but I'm
saying
it was a credible performance. What did Joshua win in there and absolutely smash him to pieces?
Indeed.
He's right about that.
Indeed. But what we need, what we want to see to complete the circle, he's right about it, complete the circle, is when Anthony Joshua goes in against the elite heavyweights, which is going to be potentially the argument about Hrgović and potentially Usyk or Fury again, we will see if the circle is completed. I hope it is, because I think what he did on the weekend regained credibility for himself and the sport. But I'm not going to run off down the road waving a banner telling everybody that ultimately everything is right in the garden. I've said he's a national treasure because I think it's a fair observation given what Fury put out. Mm. Fury made it a farce.
Yeah.
Fury made it a farce.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, listen.
You have to ask, where does it leave a boxer fighting someone from MMA? We put that to Dan Hardy, who, of course, has MMA credentials.
With the direction that combat sports are going, I always think there's going to be intrigue around these types of fights. I mean, especially at heavyweight. You know, we've got a guy now called Henan Fajardo, 6'8". And straight away, as soon as he won his last fight, John Jones, who I'm sure you guys will be aware of, said that he would be able to beat Francis Ngannou. So Ngannou's coming back into MMA to fight another really, really tough individual that could potentially be problematic in the boxing world as well. I don't mind it personally. I like these crossovers. I think they're a bit of fun. And I think prize fighters, you know, if the money's on the table and the intrigue's there, then go and get it.
Dan Hardy says he likes his crossover
sure
fights.
He does.
And they're still a bit of fun. We don't normally do this in the boxing hour, but I'm going to do it today. You can see the response we get when we talk football. I'm quite confident the response will be the same talking boxing. What do you think? Crossover fights, is that it? Are you done with them now? We saw how Ngannou hit the canvas big time when AJ connected with him. Have we had enough of these crossover fights? Is that it? Should be put them in the back burner now for good. And on AJ, has he changed your mind for you? Should he now be regarded as a national treasure, or do you still doubt that he could do it? Say, if he gets in the ring with Tyson Fury, would it be Fury for you and not AJ? Where do you stand in all of that? Do you want the end, though, of these crossover fights? Michael, what do you make of it all, these so-called crossover fights? You had enough?
As a viewer, no, I haven't, because I think they always are spectacular to watch because of what happened, if you say, at the weekend. But I do agree with Simon in that it doesn't do boxing many favours, because at that particular level, you take one punch and the unexpected could well happen. So I agree with Simon there. Spencer, I have to absolutely disagree with you, and again, side with Simon with regard to AJ, in the sense that he did not dismantle Ngannou because he only fought him.
Oh, Michael, wow. We're just losing Michael there. He seems to be driving a cement mixer.
That's making a lot of sense.
Family member rang up there, Simon,
making
was it?
Making a lot of sense.
Let's go to Steve, who's a Manchester United fan, but a boxing fan, no doubt, as well. Steve, where do you stand on this? I mean, has AJ done us all a big favour by knocking out a crossover fighter like Ngannou and maybe cementing the end for fights like those?
Yes. Let's hope so, anyway. I can't stand these crossover fights. I can't stand all the misfit stuff. You know, let's just get rid of it and get back to boxing. It's doing boxing no favours. Mm. However, on Anthony Joshua, I have to say, I love Anthony Joshua, and I felt really, really bad for him in the time that he's been going through, where he's, you know, sort of lost his confidence. He's in a dark place. But we cannot just give him a free pass because he beat Otto Wallin. Who was Otto Wallin ever? I mean, you know, Fury has a bad night.
He was the guy that cut Fury really badly in a fight, could have been stopped and took Fury all the way, lost on points. That was Otto Wallin. So at that stage, he was considered a threat.
Yeah, I just don't think he's ever been a threat in any of the other fights that he's been in. He only came to the front of boxing by that night he had with Fury. The other The other thing that I would say is this, and I know I'll get blasted for it. Who is Tyson Fury? I mean, you compare Tyson Fury with Anthony Joshua, and I'm sorry, but like Anthony Joshua has got all the better skill sets. I firmly believe Anthony Joshua beats Tyson Fury. I think the question around Usyk is a much bigger thing. However, I do agree, we can't all just get excited and give Anthony Joshua a free pass and say, yeah, you know, he's back, he's going to smash everything up and win all the title bouts. I think it's a really interesting time.
He's put his name back in the mix, that's the point.
Yes, indeed. Here's Ollie, another fight fan. Ollie, where do you stand on all of this regards crossover fights? I mean, is it time up for them?
Yeah, you're right, fellas. Nice to speak to you. Yeah, I think it is, to be honest. I mean, the thing is, what happened to Ngannou should be happening 100% of the time whenever a pro boxer fights an MMA fighter. As you can imagine, if a boxer went and tried his hand in the octagon, he'd probably get done within the first couple of minutes as well. I think Fury sort of gave some of the MMA guys a bit of false hope. Obviously, it wasn't his best on the night. But yeah, you've seen what happened with McGregor, you've seen what happened with Ngannou now. I think it's time for it, to be honest. But yeah, obviously I really like Ngannou, he's got a really good backstory and everything, but you know, you can't expect a top MMA guy to mix it with any of the top boxers, sure. Really, can you?
Ollie, one of many good calls. Thank you very much indeed. Craig's another. Craig, good afternoon to you. Where do you stand on it all, mate? Well, we've seen the last of Ngannou and his type.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me on.
No problem, Craig.
I feel like with the Ngannou thing, yeah, it's done and dusted now. He'll go back into his own thing and dominate that again, because I don't think there's a better MMA fighter in the heavyweight division than him. When it comes to Anthony Joshua, though, whoever that caller was before saying who's Tyson Fury, we all know Fury's going to wipe the floor with Joshua, in my opinion. At the end of the day, Who has Joshua fought that's in their prime other than Usyk? That's how I see it. Because, yeah, he's a knockout merchant. He's brilliant at what he does, but Fury is more technically gifted. He can knock out people, or he can just take you the 12 rounds and embarrass you. So with Fury against Ngannou, yeah, he weren't at his best. You could tell he didn't train properly. You could tell he didn't take him seriously. But when we see Fury against Usyk, we'll see the proper Fury, okay. And I think Fury will do Usyk.
Okay, that'd be music to the ears, no doubt, of Frank Warren, who I think is listening to our show this lunchtime, as they all do out there. Thank you for that. Rob, big Man United fan, take us to the 12:30 bulletin then, Rob. Crossover fights, is it goodbye to them at last after what Joshua did on Friday night in Riyadh to Ngannou?
Guys, firstly, thank you for having me on. I think it depends. I don't think it does anything good for either sport. I think potentially gone. It depends if the fans want it. However, I want to see it the other way. So I'm more of an MMA fan than a boxer. I would love to see a high-level boxer step in the cage. I think it won't happen because of ego. So Eddie Hearn said it about Anthony Joshua when he won the fight. He's the baddest man on the planet. I'm sorry, but that moniker belongs to John Jones. Ngannou was never the baddest man on the planet. He's much like Deontay Wilder. He's got the dynamite in his hands, which is ultimately the great equalizer. He's not the greatest MMA fighter. Again, that belongs to John Jones. They will say the money isn't there. That's why they wouldn't cross over. Their ego will stop them going in the cage and getting the floor wiped with them within 2 minutes. Much like happened to James Toney 14 years ago when he fought Randy Couture. We all saw how that happened. Nothing different would happen. It would be much the same. It's the ego that would prevent it.
Wow. Yeah. Rob, thank you very much indeed.
Interesting.
Quite a cross section there, Spencer. Listen, which is what we're all about.
Absolutely, Jim. I think for me, it's all about, we live in a world now of entertainment, and it's what people want to see. People want to see crossover fights. You're bringing the different audiences together.
Yeah.
And I think that works. I think that is going to work, and it will continue to work, because I think the criticism that surrounds it will always create the hype, you know, and I think that's where we're at with it. It's not going to be the last time. Didn't Muhammad Ali have some crossover fight many years ago?
Some Japanese wrestler
or something, wasn't it?
Yeah. The argument never goes away, Spencer, about as and when it happens, who wins, AJ or Fury. That's always going to rage on. Quite interestingly, even though the topic was about crossover fighters coming into the boxing ring, inevitably AJ Fury came up as a topic. Do you think all day AJ wins that?
No.
As in when they ever fight?
Myself and Simon talked about this actually on that award-winning podcast that you talk about, Talk Boxing.
Oh, it's very good.
That's out now on the Boxing YouTube channel. Anyway, I thought I'd get that in.
Yeah.
But where we was at was 12 months ago, Jim. We're talking it's an 80-20 in Fury's favour. Now we're talking it's a 50-50. You look at where Anthony Joshua is now. His confidence is reinstalled, which is important. Fury's coming off a bad performance. That doesn't mean to say that he's gone backwards. It could have been for a number of reasons, but it makes it interesting and it's a real 50-50 fight.
50-50, Simon. You go with that?
Depends what version of Tyson Fury goes
in
the ring.
Well, that's the point. That's why it's 50-50.
Yeah. If Tyson Fury goes back into the ring after beating Usyk and resembles, if he beats Usyk and resembles the Tyson Fury that I look back on, I think he beats Anthony. That's not a preference. It's not a bias that I like Fury and I don't like Joshua. It's nothing to do with it. I just think in that fight, Fury, if he's at his best, will beat Anthony Joshua. But the questions about Joshua are now more significant because he's had this period of a year getting himself back into groove. He will likely win a world title if he fights Hrgović. Yep. And the most fascinating thing is that we might get this fight.
The world's most dangerous download. Outspoken with White and Jordan. From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. Please leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast from. We're back tomorrow to bring you the best of the show.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.